I'll be reading from Luke 14. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, "Go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame." "Sir," the servant said, "what you would have ordered has been done, but there is still room." Then the master told his servant, "Go out to the roads and the country lanes and compel them to come in, so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet."
Thanks, bud. Well, good morning, church. I appreciate that introduction. My name is Taft. We, as we were talking earlier, we have four children, and it's always, we shared this with the Bible class, it's always a roll of the dice on who's going to make a trip with you and who's going to be there. I'm alone this morning. My son asked me early this morning, the first thing he said was, "How bad was the Tennessee game? How bad was the Florida game? And where are you going to preach?" And so I gave him a rundown. I said, Murfreesboro-ish. And so I told him what we were doing and where we were going. And he said, "Well, what's your lesson about today?" And he's my oldest, and he is in the third grade. He just turned 9. And I said, "Well, I'm going to talk about the table." And I said, "We're going to talk about the concept, man, of coming together, sharing a table with each other." And he said, this is pretty cool, he said, "Like our family does?" And I said, "Yeah, most of the time." And he goes, "Sometimes we're in too big of a hurry." And I thought, man, I needed to take him and just let him preach. All right? Like, he could say that, and then as together we stand and sing, and you could wake up and go eat. All right? But he said this to me. He said, "Like our family does." And I said, "Yeah, most of the time." He said, "But sometimes we're in too big of a hurry." Does this describe you and your life? Did you have intention a lot of saying, "We're going to sit down. We're going to spend time together. I'm going to do it at work. Man, we're going to have a company meeting. All right. We're going to sit down and talk about vision." Maybe with your children, you say, "I'm going to sit down and talk to you." But there's that glare coming off of the iPhone the whole time. And they're just looking down at it. And you think, "Okay, dad fail here. We can't really talk." What about church? You go to church and you say, "We're coming together. We're going to sit down. We're going to share a meal together." But somebody's chasing kids. And somebody else is talking about something. You ever been on a date? All right, nod your head. You've been on a date before? Some of you are like, "I love to go on one." All right, some wives are going, "Hey, go on a date." All right, but you ever been on a date and you said it's going to go this way, and afterwards you thought, "Oh man, that was a train wreck." All right, that did not go how I thought it was going to go. We have intentions to sit around a table. We say we're going to be together, we're going to share life together, we're going to do stuff together. But then a lot of times life can get in the way. Think about that for a minute while I tell you something about my background. I grew up at the Creve Hall Church in Nashville. Nice sized church. We literally grew up, Tom Holland was our preacher. Right next to the church, they cut a hole in the fence where we could walk through to church. So in that parking lot, man, I learned how to drive. I learned how to fight. I learned how to preach in that church building right there. They taught me a lot. And I also learned a lot, I said this in class, about staring at the back of people's heads. Because we didn't miss church. And I would show up and I would sit on my row and I would look at the back of the head with somebody in front of me. And we always had the same spots. And if I didn't see the back of your head, it meant that you were probably sick or that you were a backsliding member. All right. And so we would have all of these questions about who's not in their spot. Well, then I went to Fred Hardman. And I went to Fred Hardman and I got involved in a couple of different churches there doing some things. And I began to learn this concept of circles, not rows. And here's what I mean. I'm not talking liberal, conservative, progressive or not. But we went from just sitting on rows to sitting in circles. I don't mean just in what we call big church, but in life. And we started sitting in circles in dorms. We started sitting in circles in Bible class. We started sitting in circles at churches that I would go to preach at so that we could share life together by looking at each other's faces and not just the back of our heads. And I think that's a pretty cool concept, because if I go home tonight and say, "Honey, I want to get to know you and I'm going to do something real nice and take you out for a steak. I got a coupon. All right, and I'm going to take you to dinner, honey. And we're going to go sit over here together and share a meal together. And I tell you what, you sit right here and I'll sit right behind you." That would be terrible. There would be no intimacy there. And guess what? She may never go out with me again. But sharing life together and looking at each other and saying, hey, this is a table. This is a place of intimacy where we can get to know each other, where we can share things with each other. I think everybody here would say that there is value in that. And our concept today, talking about the table, is asking this question. As a church, do you practice this? Now, in Bible class, man, I was getting machine gun style answers of this brings me joy. This church does a great job with this. But if we really do believe that coming together around a table is a concept that's good, a concept that's valuable, do I have a parking problem? Do I have a construction problem? Do I have a church problem because, man, this place is so full, we got to blow out another wing? Man, this church is so full, we don't have enough parking for all the people that are coming in. The reality has nothing to do with your church specifically. The reality is that I say there's a lot of value in what I have here, but I could be doing more. The reality is that I will say that I've got something that's great, that coming to the table as Christians is something that's awesome, but there's always a little bit more that I can do. And I want to challenge you with that today. I know nothing about your background. I don't know anything about the things except for what I learned at Bible class. And I can promise you this message was prepared before I went in there. But there's always some things that we can do to try to be better about telling people about the table. Do me a favor and raise your hand if you are, and I'm not trying to embarrass anybody, but if you are 30, let's go here, 30 and under and single. If you are under 30 and single, I'm going to come out here like Oprah Winfrey, all right? 30 and under and single, all right? It's all right here. Some people don't want to raise their hands, okay? If you are somebody who is single, all right, we'll just say this, and there are people, once you hit a certain spot, that will say, you got to put a ring on it. You've got to get married, and it's something you really need to do. And people wonder why some people aren't excited or ready. You've had her for a long time, all right? You've known him for a minute. Make him move. Do something. Get hitched. Have you ever wondered if those people might look at you and say, I hear what you're saying, but I see how you act? If marriage is so awesome, if marriage is so good, if it's something I'm supposed to do because of how old I am and because I'm not married yet, could you do me a favor and act like you like her, your wife? Could you do me a favor and treat your husband with respect? Hey, mom, dad, grandma, uncle, neighbor, friend, boss. I may get married. I may think about it if you would start acting like it's something that you enjoy. Now, you ever thought about that with the church? Come be with us. You need to be a part of this. This is good. And if people could be really honest, would they say, are you sure? Are you sure that it's something that's great? Are you sure that it's something that's beautiful? Do you really love being around the table together? What I want to do is go to Luke 14. I appreciate you reading the end of it. But I want to go to Luke 14 and start at the beginning of something that Jesus says. Because everybody out here wants to be people that are together, people that enjoy fellowship with each other. But sometimes it's a product for us that we don't fully advertise like we should. The New Testament church coming together, spending fellowship together, isn't always something that we push the way that we should. And maybe we need to rethink how we look at it. Let's look here. Luke 14, beginning in verse 15. When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, "Blessed is the man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God." Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests." How would it change here for us if we began to look at our worship time together and our fellowship time together as a great banquet? It's a great banquet where we're coming together and we're talking about the bread of life, okay? We're talking about sharing life together. But if we viewed every Sunday, every designated time that we come together as a great banquet, and Taft, I'm surrounded by hungry people. I'm surrounded by people that need to eat. I'm surrounded by people that are always looking for, you ready for this? Free food. And so if the church is a time where we're a banquet and we come together and say, hey, all things are ready, come to the feast. You should make a song about that. All right? When we're together, it's time to eat. It's time to share the Lord together. Maybe our perspective would change if we started to believe this stuff that Jesus is saying. Because he says, a certain man's preparing a great banquet. He invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, this is pretty cool, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. Don't y'all love it when you get together with family and somebody's whipping up something and everybody's talking, you're watching the game, maybe you're having to give your report card to your granddad, but you're telling the family what you've been doing, but then it becomes eating time. And when it becomes eating time, man, yeah, we've had a good conversation, but it's time to grub. All right, man, we've had a good time catching up, but let's go smash some food. All right, it's time to go be together and eat and get to what we came here to do. He says this, the banquet's been prepared. Tell everybody, come, for everything is now ready. Verse 18, but they all alike begin to make excuses. Maybe you hear a lesson today titled The Table. And you say, Taft, I've been trying to get people to come to the table, you know, metaphorically speaking or literally, for a long time. Have you tried to invite people? Do you know how hard it is, Taft? I try to tell people to come to worship with me. I try to tell people that we have something that's valuable. But have you met my friends? Have you been to my work? Do you know the people that I'm surrounded by a lot? It's hard. It's tough. Let me tell you something. There are no excuses that are new to God. They may be new to me, they may be new to you, but there is no excuse where God says, okay, never been told that one before. Because listen here, as they began to make excuses, the first one said, I have just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Could you imagine inviting somebody to come and eat? Hey man, there's a banquet. You need to come and eat. It's going to be good. Well, I just bought some property and I need to go and look at it. Thanks, but no thanks. All right, did you buy it sight unseen? What's going on here? But I need to just go and stare at my property. I can't come and eat with you. It's important to me, not important to you. Another one said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Now, you ever made excuses to somebody about not going to do something, and it was a really good excuse to you? Oh man, this one's good. And this one's going to work. And the longer you talk about it, they're looking at you, giving you this face like, I don't believe you. All right, I'm not picking up what you're putting down here. This happens when I drove here today. I knew I needed to be on time. All right, I confessed some things to the class about my GPS. And I said, with my GPS, I follow my GPS better than I follow my creator. I mean, I will just bloop, bloop, bloop and go wherever it tells me to go. But I obeyed all the speed laws. I knew what time I was going to be here. I knew the cushion that I had. And there were some people when I got off of the exit that were flying past me. And you know what I did? Come on, man. What is this, Talladega? Like, what are you people doing flying past me? This is Sunday morning. You're supposed to love Jesus a little bit extra. Like, let's just drive and let's be cool. You know, don't kill anybody on the highway. And it was real easy for me to look at them and go, man, slow down. Like, quit going so fast. Just drive. But I'm going to leave here today. I've got a speaking appointment this afternoon. And if my time gets a little bit thin, I may be tempted to put the pedal down a little bit harder, a little bit faster. And you'll think, well, if the preacher doesn't go long, you shouldn't have a problem. All right? But I'll be tempted to get it. I'll be tempted to go after it. And you know what I'll do? I will quickly forget my judgmental attitude this morning of the people that were speeding. You see, excuses, when it's my excuse, it's a good one. All right? When it's yours, it's, you could do a little bit better than that. And right here, there are some excuses that are good for the party that's saying them. You know what? I'm sorry I can't come to your banquet. Sorry I can't come to your feast. I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. But I've already picked on marriage a little bit. I like this next one. All right? There's 2 excuses. Look at the third one. Another one said, this is verse 19, I bought the yoke of oxen. But look at verse 20. Still another said, I just got married. Can't come. You got friends like that? They got married and fell off the face of the earth. This is actually referring to something that we read in the Old Testament about when a man took a wife. And when he would take a wife, he was excused from all duties. Didn't have to work for a year. Didn't have to go and fight in the army. Pretty cool concept. He just got to stay home and love on his wife. Wouldn't that be pretty cool today? People be signing up for that all the time. But there's all of these excuses that are made of why somebody cannot come and be here. And there may be somebody this morning that you've been praying about for a long time. Man, I wish you would come and be a part of us. You know how good it is. You know how we love on people at Milton. I wish that you would come here and you would be with us and say, sorry, I can't. I've got this. There's another reason why I can't be there. But after all of these excuses, and this is where he picked up with the read this morning. In verse 21, the servant came back and reported this to his master. And the Lord said to him, that's okay. That's not what happens. It says here, when he comes to his master, the owner of the house became angry and he ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. You can see this right here and look what it says. It says, go out quickly. We like to say it like this. Do not delay. Don't say that talking to people about what we have here is something I'm going to do next year. It's not something I'm going to do next quarter. It's not something I'm going to do when I get around to it. When I believe that we've got something here that's valuable, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, come now, because things are ready. Come here because you need what we have at this church. We all have a need for a Savior. But it says, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town. And it says, and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. I did outreach ministry for 2 different years at 2 different churches, so 4 years total. And I did them at these churches, and these churches would come to me and they would say, hey, we really want an outreach ministry. And I would say, okay, I would love to come and to help you with outreach ministry, but one of my mentors told me this. He said, Taft, be careful. I said, be careful doing outreach? And he said, yes, because every church loves to say they have an outreach ministry. He said, it's like a sports car. People like to say they have it. Nobody really knows how to drive it. Okay, and when they do get in it, they just want to go real slow and be super careful. All right, and so I said, okay. So we went to these churches and we started doing outreach ministry, and immediately people started to come in who did not look like us, talk like us, dress like us, smell like us, sing like us. I can keep going with the like us, okay? And when you really start to get down to it and you start to do stuff like this, things can and will change. Things can and will look different. And not only is it something that the Lord says, that's okay, I can work with it. It's what He says, go and do. He says, go out and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Here's what He's saying, church. Go out and bring to your table people that might not help your bottom line when it comes to church finances. He says, go out and bring in the people that probably will need a lot of assistance. Go out and bring people that will challenge you in your discipleship. Go out and bring in people that might not look like you or talk like you, because that is who I want at my table. I shared with our class a story about a guy named Big Game James. And I'm telling you this because when I first met him, we were feeding him at our church. And I said, what's your name? And he said, James. And I said, okay, James what? And he goes, you can just call me Big Game James. I'm going to advance the story here. Big Game James ate with us, told me he didn't need our financial assistance, but did say, I want to start working with you. He started working hand in hand with our church. He got baptized at our church, started doing all of this, and we were having an area-wide singing. And he came up to me, he said, Taft, I'm a Christian now. And I said, I know you are, James. He goes, I would like to lead in worship. And I said, let me bring an elder over here and let them talk to you about that. So like a good minister, I said, hey, brother so-and-so, here's James. See ya. And I walked off and let them have a conversation. He said, James, he said, what is it you want to do today? He goes, I'd like to lead a song at the area wide. And he looked at him, he goes, well, I don't see why not. And he said, okay. He said, what song are you going to sing? And he goes, I don't know. You got any suggestions? He said, James, I want you to sing whatever song, you ready for this, is on your heart. Fast forward to that afternoon. Area-wide singing. Big Game James steps up in the pulpit with all the local churches coming together. This is usually the moment when somebody stands up and says, today we're going to be singing one of my favorites, and I'm about to show you what a great song leader I am. I hail from generations of song leaders in the Church of Christ, and they get up there and they just bring it. All right, that's what usually happens. James stands up in a holy t-shirt. I don't mean it had a cross on it. All right? He stands up in a holy t-shirt. He stands up in a holy t-shirt that was not treated. So it was white-ish. Okay? And he stands up in front of the church and he says, one of the shepherds here told me to sing whatever is on my heart. And then he looks at him and he begins to sing about 5 seconds of a popular at that time Katy Perry song. All right? And he stands up in front of the church and he says, you're so hypnotizing. He goes, I'm just kidding. He said, song number 539. And he goes into Victory in Jesus, sings it beautifully. I loved every moment of that because it was different and he didn't know the rules. I loved every moment of that because he thought, this is a place where I can have a good time. I love every moment of that because it was different. It made people uncomfortable. And guess what? I am going to go to heaven with Big Game James. I loved it because it's a moment and opportunity to say, bring people to your table that might blow your mind. Bring people to your table that just aren't soccer moms with 2.5 kids, and the man might make deacon in 2 years if he does a good job. All right, those are great too. But bring people to your table that are different. And then they say this, we've already tried that. That they say, we have what you are ordering has already been done. Verse 22. And please underline, highlight, or bracket this last part in verse 22. Sir, what you ordered has been done, but I love this. But there is still room. There is still room should be the mantra of every church on this planet. No, brother, you don't understand. Fire codes will shut us down. Whatever. There is still room. I heard a man tell me one time, he said, Taff, if you are happy with the size of your church, don't be. It's too small. Well, no, wait. No. Your church is too small. No, you don't understand. No, your church is still too small because there is still room. There is always room when we talk about kingdom work for people to come in and to sit at my table. You've been in a meeting before where they say, here, pull up a chair or squeeze onto my row. And you thought, this is a logistical nightmare. There's really no room for me at this table. Or come sit on my row. And it's like cheek to cheek to cheek. And you're like, man, I cannot sit here. I'll get behind you and it's cool. But people want to include you and they want to bring you in. That's church. That's my table. That's who I'm supposed to be, is the one that says, there is still room. But verse 23, the master told his servant, go out to the roads and to the country lanes. And my translation here says, and make them come in. Some translations will say, compel them to come in. Or I like one that says, it sounds kind of violent, constrain them to come in. But it's the idea of going and saying, you need to be here with me because of what happens here that is special. Years ago, we were working with a church in Atlanta. And we were working with this church and we were doing some outreach related activities. And that morning, we had VBS. And so I was rushing around like crazy. And I came in and I preached that morning unintentionally in my VBS t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Afterwards, when I spoke in that t-shirt and a pair of jeans, one of the elders' wives came up to me and she goes, I love you so much. I thought, okay, but. And she said, but Taft, I couldn't hear you well because you weren't wearing what you normally wear. And I looked at her and I said, Miss Becky, I am so sorry. We were doing some work. I was in this. I said, I am so sorry. I said, I would never do that to offend you. Fast forward to that night. A lady that we had picked up that morning for church came up to me. You know what she said? She said, Taft, I want to thank you for your lesson this morning. I said, man, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. She goes, I want to thank you for your lesson this morning. She said, because you dressed down. This is a lady who wasn't a member of our church who we were just doing outreach with. And she said, I want to thank you because you dressed down this morning. And I can't even make this up. She said, because of the way you dressed this morning, I heard you better. Hold up. An elder's wife told me, hey, I didn't really hear you well this morning because you were in a t-shirt. I needed you in a tie and a suit. A person that I'm trying to outreach to said, hey, I heard you better because you were dressed down. In a moment like that for me, this isn't a tough decision. I promise I'm not going to take too much off this morning, all right? But in a moment like that for me, if I can handle a situation like this and I can be respectful about it, you're not a martyr because you didn't wear a tie. And if somebody tells you to wear a tie for your job, wear it, put it on, no big deal. But I was able to go back to the elders and say, hey, if there's something I have to do to get the gospel to somebody else, short of sin, I'm going to do it. And in order to compel somebody to come in, I've got to think about what makes you comfortable at our table. And he says, compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who are invited will get a taste of my banquet. As a church this morning, here's what I want you to know. I want you to know that when we talk about having a table and having something that's valuable and having people that come here together to eat and to partake and to do life together, we've got to get creative in how we bring people in. And I can't get creative and come up with all these schemes or ideas or festivals or meals together and say, come to my table, if I don't believe that something valuable is truly happening here. And that's my question for you this morning. Do you believe that there's something special happening at this church? Yeah. Yeah, man, I love it. It's great. We're full of love. We're full of joy. We're always trying to bring people in. Well, then do I believe that this house is too full? Do I believe that there is always room? And is there something in my life that I need to take care of first in order to say, you know what? I'm going to take care of my heart. I'm going to take care of my life so that I'm comfortable bringing somebody in. That's why we have moments this morning of invitation. That's why we've got an opportunity to say, if there is something that you need to work on in your life, fix it. If there is something that you need to do by stepping into the water and saying, I want to put Jesus on in baptism because I want to live this life. I want it to be valuable. I believe that there is something special happening at this table. Do it. If there is somebody you need to talk to today and you say, you know what? I've been around the table with you for a long time, but I'm mad at you. My flesh comes out. I don't like you a lot, even though we come to this building and we sit here together. Take care of it. Because if I'm not dead, it's not too late. There is always room at the table of the Lord. And I have an opportunity every week to come here and partake of something that's special. If we can help you as a church family this morning in any way to get more value out of this table and to bring other people here to something that matters, we hope that you'll come this morning as we stand and sing our song of invitation.